Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We just were diving into the enumerated powers yesterday when we ran out of time. Maybe I'm editorializing too much, or maybe I'm spending too much time on the obligatory. So we're going to dive into them very quickly. I just need to tell you about our listen line. You do not want to miss these shows. We go over the details. We go over the Constitution at this point in time, but we actually read through. And I've been asked by some people, you actually read? And I go, I do not want to paraphrase. I want to make sure that people hear the words for themselves. Don't take my word for it. Hear the words for yourself and come to the conclusion that we are not abiding by, we are not living within the framework of the Constitution. If you recognize the fact that we are operating, or more importantly, the federal government is operating well outside the boundaries of the Constitution, then I believe you have what it takes to actually call them out and step in and demand that they get back within that framework. As we understand, everybody wants us to abide by the law, but those in charge, those who have their fingers on the controls, don't want to have to abide by the law. They are self-aggrandizing, they're elitists, and they have been doing this for too long. They are too close to pushing us over that edge. And it's not the Constitution that's the problem. It is those who are failing to live up to their obligated oath of office in supporting the Constitution. They're not supposed to make themselves rich. They're not supposed to be able to put themselves above us. They're not supposed to be able to do many of the things that they're doing. What is it going to take to get you to actually take a stand? And I'm hoping, as I started this year out, make this year the year. Make these facts the catalyst in getting you to actually demand compliance. That's the word right there, folks. It's all about compliance. Now, I know that there are evil things that, you know, people want you to comply to or so forth, but we're not pursuing that here. We're wanting everybody to live within the supreme law of the land. If you cannot do your job that we want you to do, federal government, then give us an amendment. But until we obtain full compliance, there should be no amendments considered. We need to get back to exactly how we're supposed to be living and how government is supposed to be operating before we reach some point of saying, you know what, we do need to give you more power. Because I will guarantee you that as we discover the inadequacies for our technologies and where we stand today, we will all harmoniously come to the conclusion that giving the federal government as it is supposed to exist is not the solution. Giving them more power, giving them specific and delegated powers to do domestic things is not the solution. That we have to build upon this hybrid constitutional republic and start creating separate and individual entities for very specific purposes. We are better served when we do not create a collective Borg that has full control over every aspect of our lives. Keeping them separated, creating a polity that actually manages energy, creating a separate polity, that way we have control over them and they're not working together against us, which is exactly what the deep state is. That's how these things happen, because they collectivize power. And that's what they've been doing. And so, as you know, we need to get into the Constitution, get through these things so that you have profound understanding that there is no delegated power for housing and urban development, for health care, and all of the things that they are choosing to do unto us. And therefore, we have the opportunity, and that opportunity, that door is open for us now, and it is starting to shut as we move towards the Bolshevik Revolution. We only have a few years, folks. We only have a few years. So I beg, I plead, I am asking you to have patience, read through these things with me, listen. And in doing so, that number to listen, if you cannot stream this or if you're not in broadcasting range and can't tune in, the number is 605-562-4209. Share this number with your friends. Ask them to call in during this show's airing time, which is 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Well, it's daylight time now, but soon it'll be standard time. And it is 5 to 6 Central Time, 4 to 5 Mountain Time, and 3 to 4 Pacific Time. Have them dial in during those times so that they can actually start hearing the dialogue. We're not here to make a lot of money. We're not here to be the shills for all sorts of advertisers. We're looking for people that want to help us, and that's why we have Red State Coffee. We ask that you consider, if you drink coffee, consider buying Red State Coffee instead. It may cost you more, but it is supporting the only thing that is trying to get the federal government back into the bottle. The genie has been let out of the bottle, and Republic Review is actually the elixir. It is the method. It is the tool that will get the federal government back into the bottle or into the framework of the Constitution, as I always say. With that, let me just dive forward because there's all sorts of other things I could say, but I want to get through the Constitution as fast as possible. So we've covered the uniform rule of naturalizations and bankruptcies. We've covered the fact that they do have the responsibility of, you know, coining and so forth, but they do not have the ability to control markets. They don't have the ability to set up the SEC. Where in there do they have the ability to control and regulate our exchange markets where we have stocks and our commodities and so forth? That is well outside the boundaries. That is not an implied power. It is not even an associated link. It is a usurped power. The fact that they have controls over our markets, our stock markets, and all these different markets, whatever they are, whether it be the manufacturing industries, whether it be the food, what it doesn't matter. There is nowhere in here, in this line, to coin money and regulate the value thereof to ensure that they're not manipulating it by printing too much or keeping enough to allow the market to flow or to allow our economy to at least function properly. Then I'm here to tell you that they have usurped all sorts of powers. And they're doing it without anybody standing up and saying, hey, you can't do this. Now, not that we don't want to have controls, but those controls are left to the states. If New York wants to have an exchange system, whether that be the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ or whatever, then other states have to come up with agreements in how we are to work these exchanges and securities and so forth. It is not the federal government's responsibility. It's not an enumerated power. You want to give them that power? It would be the biggest mistake because, look, they've actually crashed our markets. They've actually manipulated us. J.P. Morgan worked with the federal government in doing that a long time ago. So anyway, let me just move on. To provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States. So for counterfeiting, here is one law that they actually have the enumerated power that they're supposed to keep people from actually printing money. Well, guess what? What do? Banks are creating money, and they're actually in collusion with the Federal Reserve. Get smart on this stuff. And as a matter of fact, I know Ron Paul is out there going, we got to audit the Fed. That would be the stupidest idea possible if you understand that when the federal government audits the Fed, they've just legitimized an unconstitutional government. What they have to do, what the states need to do, is demand that the Federal Reserve be shut down and torn apart, period. The Federal Reserve is unconstitutional. They've been stealing money, and they've been basically padding their wallets. The elitists and the globalists have been padding their wallets at the expense of the United States and the good people of the United States. They are also supposed to, this is another constitutional power, to establish post offices and post roads. Post offices is strictly for the correspondence of mail, as we understand that. And post roads are not roads for the delivery of mail, but post roads are for the open lines of travel to get from the state capital to the District of Columbia. That is it. And as a matter of fact, this was pretty well elaborated by Andrew Jackson in his veto message back to Congress in defining what a post road was or wasn't. And so it is clear that they're not supposed to be mingling and dabbling in our waterways, connections, even our airwaves. Anyway, we're at a break, so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so let's move forward a little bit. We've just covered the establishment of post roads and post offices. This next one, which would be number 8 in off the Avalon website, to promote, not to fund, not to regulate, not to manage, but to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. In other words, giving them patents so that they can protect themselves and make money. It is not to fund an education system. It is not to have the NPR. It is not to have all of these things that they are doing regarding science, arts, and so forth. Those are far... Those are childish reaches and usurpations. I mean, they have no constitutional authority to do those things. Here's the next one. And this kind of, these next two kind of go hand in hand with to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting, to constitute tribunals of inferior to the Supreme Court. In other words, create a subordinate federal court system, which we have these districts of. I have a problem with the way they have done these districts. I think that we could actually do a much better job than allowing the Ninth District Court to actually continue to do what it does. And as a matter of fact, I loved the idea of a traveling court. What I believe should happen is the judges, just like in the military, should not be able to reside in one area and actually become a liberal bastion so that they can get away with doing all sorts of unconstitutional things like the Ninth Circuit Court. I believe that these judges should have to rotate around between these different, when you get to those district courts, when you're at the highest level of appeals in these tribunals of inferior courts, then I believe that they should be having to do travel or move every 3 to 5 years, just like in the military, so that they can't camp and create these, again, these bastions of leverage and attacks against our Constitution by trying to promote agendas that are contrary and actually outright violations to our Constitution. And I also believe that these courts need to have a weight, in other words, a behavior process, fitness reports like we have in the military, to where, you know, there is some level of measure of whether these judges in these inferior courts are actually doing their job in being protectors of the Constitution, or if they're trying to use these positions as legislative opportunities. Okay, so number 9 was the constitute tribunals. So again, and this kind of goes with subsection 6, to provide for the punishment, because this is where they, this is where the enumerated powers of law and punishment are. Number 10, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high sea and offenses against the law of nations. It doesn't say anything about drugs. It doesn't say anything about crime, murder, kidnapping across state lines. It doesn't say anything about that. The only laws they have jurisdiction over are for counterfeiting, treason, as we know, and to punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the laws of nations. Both of these, offenses against laws of nations and the piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, are two types of laws that are being violated or committed by people that are outside the United States. The reason this is here is to protect U.S. citizens who may be charged with a crime on the high seas, but may not have truly been a crime. That this is just a protection of jurisdiction, so that if somebody's to be tried against the laws of nations, like if they're in Iran and all of a sudden Iran says you violated our law, this right here throws the gauntlet down and says we have jurisdiction over this and we will punish them accordingly. And we have failed to honor this. Okay? This is something that we continually allow our sovereign individuals, our sovereign citizens, to be thrown to the jurisdiction of another court. We should and absolutely should demand jurisdiction over all of it, because it's in the Constitution, folks. It's right here. They're supposed to be protecting us by demanding jurisdiction over any citizen that commits a crime on the high seas and or offenses against laws of nations. Okay, so number 11, to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal. In other words, to create and or to endow and or to provide license for creating vessels of war, and to make rules concerning captures on land and water. In other words, we're supposed to have rules that, you know, concern the capturing. So if we go to war and we capture that land, we're supposed to have our own rules. And oh, by the way, the framers wanted to make sure that we were congruent with the laws of nations, whether they be back in those days, it was the laws of conquest. They wanted to make sure that if we captured land, as we did from Mexico three times or whatever, I mean, the shenanigans that the Mexicans have played over, because unfortunately, they've had leaders that were truly corrupt, like Santana. Santana. Anyway, you know, he actually extorted money out of us, I think, twice for the same land. Anyway. The next one, to raise, so we've given them the ability to actually go to war, right? And to create vessels of war and to create rules of captures on land and on water, captures of people, captures of land, captures of areas and regions. And next is to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. The intent of this was to ensure that we did not create a standing army. And as a matter of fact, if you want to read the ratification base, we go through this when we talk about the militia. The design of having is we should only have to stand an army. Now, so I understand back in the days of muskets, mortars, artilleries, and the rudimentary weapons, or I should say the implements of war, you could probably throw an army together decently and be able to wage war back in those days, probably a lot easier than it is today. We have such a technologically advanced society that you actually have to teach people how to fly a jet, how to, you know, drive these vehicles and so forth. And so to be able to maintain a force that is actually capable of, and I truly believe in the concept or the Reagan's philosophy of peace through strength. In other words, by having the ability to project force, it actually keeps people from playing and trying to pick on us and doing bad things. So that is a great diplomacy path. However, I truly believe that we do need, and I think that this would be one of those things that we may want to consider instead of creating a, you know, giving them the ability to manage energy or manage our education or healthcare and all these other things. Once we get full compliance, I honestly think that we should look at allowing for a form and or a level of military, because the Navy is obviously a part of and one of those things, because the next thing is to provide and maintain a Navy. In other words, we're supposed to maintain a Navy, but not the Army. The Army should be coming and going and so forth, but I think we're so far into a world of evil that we do need to have a standing army for external focus and external use, period. And I believe that that needs to be looked at, and I think the states need to figure out how to do that if they wanted to create a National Guard system in addition to their militia to augment the federal government when they want to declare war, then they use what they've got. Then I believe that might be a better way to go instead of just giving them this force that they completely control. So anyway, this is one of those things that I honestly believe the states really need to look at and what they want to do and how they want to manage that, because allowing our armed forces to just be dismantled every so many years does not allow us to integrate and innovate and be able to be a leading force. So the people just don't, you know, people just, they want to behave well. As a matter of fact, if we grew our republic to where every state in the world became and cooperated and became a part of the United States, then we would never have to go to war again, because we shouldn't be fighting amongst ourselves, because we have these set values, these set laws that tell us how to function and operate with one another. Anyway, but that's a really pie in the sky type of thing. So when we come back, as we just covered, to provide for and maintain a Navy, we will take it from there, which is subsection 14, when we get back. So please stay tuned. We're still going through the enumerated powers. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so let's be clear here. As we start looking at the enumerated powers, I want you to play this game or do your own analysis on this. Go through all of these and lump them into categories, right? If you do that, you should be able to come up with, and I'll just start off with the fact of the military. How much of these enumerated powers are regarding national security, our national defenses, military, or what have you? And you'll come to find out that 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, six, right? Six enumerated powers, all focused on defense. And as a matter of fact, 17, which would be the seventh, actually supports defense as well. And we'll get into these. But if you look at the other parts of these, like the offices and the functions of the State Department is regulating commerce between foreign governments, Indian tribes, and the states. You have to start looking at this and saying, you know what? This is why they only created a Treasury Department. They only created a State Department for foreign relations and inner relations between the states regarding commerce and commerce only, as well as the War Department. That's why they didn't create any of these departments for healthcare and welfare. And they didn't create a department for agriculture, a department for, you know, parks and forestry, a department of the interior to, you know, control the lands of the states. The concept that the federal government would own and possess land outside the needful and necessary buildings, when we get to subsection 17, was repugnant to them. They knew that that's what King George, the kings, were doing. They would take and secure the land from the people so that the people couldn't hunt on the land, so the people couldn't use the land. As Thomas Jefferson said, the land is for the living, not for the government. And so that's why, you know, we need to really kind of reevaluate how we allow people to just buy and hoard land, whether they be a king or whether they be an opulent elitist coming in and buying land and not allowing that to be improved. We used to have laws. States actually used to have laws that said if you owned land and you don't improve it, and somebody can go in and, you know, squat or gain access to your land and improve upon it, then that land that they improve upon becomes theirs. I'm absolutely okay with, because it's not about property, it's about hoarding and possessing. So it's one thing for you to buy gold and be able to put that and put that into a safeguard. But if you just buy land and put a fence around it, when it kind of comes down to this, and I get into arguments over hunting on this all the time. You know, how is it that that deer that crossed over your fence is your property? How is it that the fish that have swam up across your fence line and is now on your land, how is that fish yours? These are living creatures that traverse boundaries and do not understand borders and boundaries. And so, as far as I'm concerned, that is really not your property. It's almost like a human being that absolutely walks onto your property not knowing. And, you know, because there's a hole, because the fence is gone, for whatever reason, does that mean that that person becomes your property? Absolutely not. And the fact of the matter is, we need to start looking at a greater civil society that doesn't allow people to just hoard and keep, allow countries to come in. It's unfathomable for me to think that we allow China or other countries and how that even is within the boundaries of the Constitution, allowing foreign entities to buy our land. Because what that does is that almost creates a state within a state, which is a deliberate or palpable, whatever you want to call, blatant violation of our Constitution. There is only one state that is established in this physical land, and that is the state of, you fill in the blank, Iowa, Idaho. There is once that state is established, no other country, no other entity can come in and create their own states like we see where Islam or Islamists are buying land and creating states, Islamic states, within a state. That is unfathomable. I have a hard time understanding getting that into, you know, any type of logic and reason. Anyway, beyond to provide and maintain a navy, the next one, the next enumerated power, is to make rules for the government and or the governing and regulating of the land and naval forces. In other words, they need to, and this is kind of a redundant rule, but it doesn't just apply to the militia and or the military. This also applies to those who are in the civil service. You have to understand that if you're going to own and possess and or rent buildings and have land and so forth, you have to have an accounting office to make sure that the necessary maintenance, the necessary, you know, bills for power or what have you are being paid so that, you know, you can do the work that you need to do. Just like with a business. If you're going to build a couple of buildings where you're going to be manufacturing or doing some type of work or creating products or whatever, then the fact of the matter is that you need to have an accounting type of office to make sure that there's enough soap when you need the soap to do the cleaning, or paint when you have to do refurbishments or what have you. And so one of the roles, responsibilities, and powers that was created out as soon as they created this general government was they created a general accounting office. That doesn't hurt my head. That's within the necessary and needful things that they need to function with this land, property, or whatever it is they're doing. So anyway, so they're calling for to make rules for the government and regulations of the land and naval forces. Okay. That makes sense. They've got to be able to have these rules or standards and processes and so forth. The next one, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. Let me ask you this. If there's a constitutional law, let's say constitutionally we created a Department of Forestry, and that the Department of Forestry is to keep people from hunting, you know, other than during certain times of the year or what have you, like we have today, okay? Well, let's just say that's a constitutional thing. Who is it that is supposed to execute and perform that work in the states? It says right here, the militia. The militia is to execute the laws of the land. And this is why I tell you that every federal enforcement agency that is living within your state boundaries is a standing army managing unconstitutional government. If you don't want to look at any other way than just, you know, federal government, okay, but you're blindly looking at a tyrannical thug like army that is living amongst us. And these, and unfortunately, these people that are within these spheres of careers believe that they're doing a legitimate job when actually they're violating the Constitution. It is the militia that is supposed to actually execute the laws of the Union, and they're supposed to suppress insurrections and repel invasions. That's what it says right here. To provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. So when the militia stood up in New Mexico and the governor called them down, that governor should have been removed from office in New Mexico, because the militia was actually doing their job, their constitutional responsibility, by repelling the invasion that is coming across their border. And so why is it that that governor is not being charged with treason and being marched to the gallows? Folks, we have the laws of the land we have to live by. You don't like them, there is a process to change them. It's called the Article 5 process. But you cannot just arbitrarily choose what laws you want to enforce, what laws you want to create. That is the pure definition of tyranny. The next enumerated power is to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. I'm going to stop right there. I've said this before, that we shouldn't be going to Walmart to buy our guns and ammo. The federal government should be giving us our military-grade munitions, our military-grade weapons, our military-grade training, all of that, that we, as all people, should be receiving from the government. You know, look at all the money that they're spending unconstitutionally, and they could actually be arming every citizen of the United States so that they can be gainfully employed in the militia, whether it be the organized or unorganized. Even in the unorganized, you still have to have some kind of standards, regulations, and understanding expectations that if we have to deploy because we're being invaded in the South, we know what to do and how to enforce our laws. You know, Washington didn't take a hesitation when somebody wanted to desert. That person was shot in the back, period. I mean, you have laws, you have standards, you have regulations, you have an obligation to live up to these things that you have obligated yourself to. And there are obligations as citizens of every state, of every nation. And so anyway, we'll get back into subsection, I believe this is 16, as soon as we get back on the militia. So here's these two promos. We'll be right back after this. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so where were we? We were in Section 8 still. We ended up starting off with Section 8 yesterday. We're still plowing through Section 8 because GR is editorializing a little bit. Maybe too much? I don't think so, because I want you to understand just how far off we are from abiding by the Constitution. And we're right now on subsection 16, which is to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them. Okay, so governing such part of them, that doesn't mean that they have and govern the entire militia. That's why there is an organized militia, and that is what the federal government or the general government governs. The unorganized militia is the rest of, because every state should have a law that requires that all male citizens between the ages of this age are to a point of disability where they cannot contribute to the militia. And I think in some cases, some states actually waive those who have served in the military honorably, you know, for retirement or what have you. But I think they're still obligated in the reserve forces and or in this unorganized militia to be able to come to the aid and defense of their state as well as the Republic. So anyway, the organized militia is what the federal government has a responsibility to govern such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Now, I want you to understand that the funding should be coming from Congress for our militia. And so if you start understanding when we were talking about having a standing army and talking about these militias and so forth, We need to get to a point where we actually start figuring out how, without changing the content, because we do not want the federal government centralizing all these powers to create standing armies and tyrannical rule, taking your land away from you because you wanted to create a little fishing pond on your property, and some environmentalist comes along and says you're violating environmentalist bureaucracy laws and so forth. Are you kidding me? Really? We have to do away with tyranny. We have to do away with people and organizations and bureaucracies that are regulating away our liberties. Period. The 17th subsection is to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may be secession of particular states. In other words, two states, Maryland and Virginia, seceded a portion of their property or a portion of their state to the federal government, which could not exceed 10 miles. 10 miles by 10 miles. Why? Why did they do this? They wanted to make sure the federal government couldn't grow beyond that because they knew that a centralized power could easily start self-aggrandizing. So they wanted to constrain that. The only exception to land being used outside of 10 nautical miles in stature or size was for the military. And so if you look at what is being said here, not exceeding 10 miles square as made by concession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of government of the United States. So this first section of subsection 17 identifies Washington, D.C. as federal property. It cannot be a state. It cannot have representation. You do not allow those who are your public servants to have control over their own representation. In other words, if you live in Washington, D.C., you are surrendering the ability to be a citizen of a state. When I lived on a military base, I did not live and was not subject to, only when I went outside the base was I subject to state law. Because if it's speed limit, everything else was managed by the military on military bases. And so my representation as a military man was not the congressional district where that base fell into. My representation was to where I entered into service, my home state. That's where I voted. Unless you wanted to surrender your home citizenship and become a citizen of another state, then you could apply. But at that point in time, or actually later, because there used to be a point in time where you could actually get a license in every state you were deployed to. That's right. You could have a license in California, Nevada, Texas, Florida, and so forth, until the states got to a point where they said, hey, we want to make it so that you can only have one license. And so you can either keep your home state license, which with the state of Washington, I know that their licenses do not expire for military persons as long as they're active duty in the military and for so many days beyond their termination of service, then you don't have to worry about getting a license in every state. You're always going to be granted license and capabilities to drive. The point is that they started making it so that you could only have one license. You had to choose whether it be your home state or the state you're living in. So if you move from one state to the next, then you'd have to get another state and you would have to surrender that. But those were laws, I don't know when they came up with, but I know that back in the 60s and before that, I believe there were states that allowed you to actually just go and get a state without having to turn in the other state's license. Anyway, back to this whole concept. So Washington, D.C. was a federal property set apart. It was not a state, and that Congress had exclusive legislation over all cases. They created all the laws. They determined what the speed limits were. They determined however they wanted to govern that land. The fact that they created a city called Washington, D.C. and created a mayor instead of actually, because Congress, instead of voting, they have exclusive legislation. Congress probably should have said, we're going to start appointing an ambassador for the people who happen to come here and live in the federal lands of the District of Columbia for however long that they want to live. But they would have made it so that there was no separate government because, again, Congress has exclusive legislative power over this district. Next part of this is what other parts of land can the federal government own in subsection 17? And it is this. And two, exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislatures of the states in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings, and to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers listed here in Section 8, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in the department or officer thereof. And so this is that was subsection 18. The whole point of subsection 17 was, one, it created the District of Columbia's federal land and federally controlled by Congress. Secondly, it identified what other types of land that they could have. Did they list land for agriculture? Did they list land for parks and recreations? No. Erections of forts, magazines, arsenals, and dockyards. So what they just listed was military type of land use and dockyards, meaning land for commerce to flow in and out of the United States. Those dockyards were international ports, not internal ports. So let's say on Lake Superior, you've got Michigan and or Wisconsin. I forget what's on Superior, but I think it's Michigan, Wisconsin. Whatever states are on these lakes, you can have ports where you can go back and forth between the states, but there's no need for a federal government to have a port there. It would only be necessary for them if there was an economic war where they had to step in and say, okay, just to make things, you know, palatable, we're going to intervene in how you guys are flowing commerce because you guys are violating this commerce clause. And you're, you know, waging economic warfare upon each other. But that's not the case. The case was to ensure that the federal government was able to make sure of everything that was coming in, that the appropriate duties and imposts and excise taxes on whatever was being done so that things weren't being skirted by the federal government. And that's why in America, people did not skirt the laws of the land. They actually, happily obliged the government and followed the laws of the land, unlike other places. Okay, so Section 9 is, if you really want to look at these are the provisions against the federal government, okay? And in Section 10, these are the prohibitions placed upon the states. In other words, when we come back tomorrow, we're going to go into actual restrictions that are placed on the federal government and the states in Section 9 and 10. So with that, we'll be back tomorrow with more on the Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.